Chapter 72. Now approaching Ternan, where we shall not stop, but go on and make Valens, a city of 25,000 people. It's too delicious, floating with the swift current under the yawningly superb sunshiny days in deep peace and quietness. Some of these curious old historical towns strangely persuade me, but it is so lovely afloat that I don't stop, but view them from the outside and sail on. We get abundance of grapes and peaches for next to nothing. Joseph is perfect. He is at his very best and never was better in his life. I guess he gets discouraged and feels disliked and in the way when he is lying around, but here he is perfection, and brimful of useful alacrities and helps and ingenuities. When I woke up an hour ago and heard the clock strike 4, I said, "Seem to have been asleep an immensely long time. I must have gone to bed mighty early. I wonder what time I did go to bed." And I got up and lit a candle and looked at my watch to see. Afloat 2 hours below Bourke Street and Deal. Monday, 11 a.m., September 28. Livy darling, I didn't write yesterday. We left Lavault in a driving storm of cold rain, couldn't write in it, and at 1 p.m, when we were not thinking of stopping, we saw a picturesque and mighty ruin on a high hill back of a village, and I was seized with a desire to explore it. So we landed at once, and set out with rubbers and umbrella, sending the boat ahead to St. Andiel, and we spent 3 hours clambering about those cloudy heights among those worn, and vast and idiotic ruins of a castle built by two crusaders 650 years ago. The work of these asses was full of interest, and we had a good time inspecting, examining and scrutinizing it. All the hills on both sides of the Rhone have peaks and precipices, and each has its gray and wasted pile of moldy walls and broken towers. The Romans displaced the Gauls, the Visigoths displaced the Romans, the Saracens displaced the Visigoths, the Christians displaced the Saracens, and it was these pious animals who built these strange lairs and cut each other's throats in the name, and for the glory of God, and robbed and burned and slew in peace and war. And the pauper and the slave built churches, and the credit of it went to the bishop who racked the money out of them. These are pathetic shores, and they make one despise the human race. We came down in an hour by rail, but I couldn't get your telegram till this morning, for it was Sunday and they had shut up the post office, to go to the circus. I went to. It was all one family, parents, and 5 children performing in the open air to 200 of these enchanted villagers, who contributed coppers when called on. It was a most gay and strange and pathetic show. I got up at 7 this morning, to see the poor devils cook their poor breakfast and pack up their sordid fineries. This is a 9 km current, and the wind is with us. We shall make Avignon before 4 o'clock. I saw watermelons and pomegranates for sale at St. Andiel. With a power of love, sweetheart, S.A.M.L. Hotel d'Europe, Avignon, Monday, 6 p.m., September 28. Well, Livy darling, I have been having a perfect feast of letters for an hour, and I thank you and dear Clam with all my heart. It's like hearing from home after a long absence. It is early to be in bed, but I'm always abed before 9, on this voyage, and up at 7 or a trifle later, every morning. If I ever take such a trip again, I will have myself called at the first tinge of dawn, and get to sea as soon after as possible. The early dawn on the water, nothing can be finer, as I know by old Miss Sissa by experience. I did so long for you, and saw yesterday morning the most superb sunrise. The most marvelous sunrise. And I saw it all from the very faintest suspicion of the coming dawn all the way through to the final explosion of glory. But it had interest private to itself, and not to be found elsewhere in the world, for between me and it, in the far distant eastward, was a silhouette mountain range in which I had discovered, the previous afternoon, a most noble face upturned to the sky, and mighty form outstretched, which I had named Napoleon dreaming of universal empire, and now, this prodigious face, soft, rich, blue, spiritual, asleep, tranquil, reposeful, lay against that giant conflagration of ruddy and golden splendors all rayed like a wheel with the upstreaming and far-reaching lances of the sun. It made one want to cry for delight, it was so supreme in its unimaginable majesty and beauty. We had a curious experience today. A little after I had sealed and directed my letter to you, in which I said we should make a Vignan before four, we got lost. We ceased to encounter any village or ruin mentioned in our articularizes, and the tailed guide of the Rhone went drifting along by the hour in a wholly unknown land and on an uncharted river. Confounded, we stopped talking and did nothing but stand up in the boat and search the horizons with the glass and wonder what in the devil had happened. And at last, away yonder at 5 o'clock, when some east towers and fortresses hove in sight, we couldn't recognize them for a Vignan, yet we knew by the broken bridge that it was a Vignan. Then we saw what the trouble was. At some time or other we had drifted down the wrong side of an island, and followed a sluggish branch of the Rhone not frequented in modern times. We lost an hour and a half by it, and missed one of the most picturesque and gigantic and history-sodden masses of castellated medieval ruin that Europe can show. It was dark by the time we had wandered through the town and got the letters and found the hotel, so I went to bed. We shall leave here at noon tomorrow and float down to Arles, arriving about dark, and there bid goodbye to the boat, the river trip finished. Between Arles and Nimes and Avignon again, we shall be till Saturday morning, then rail it through on that day to Ouchy, reaching the hotel at 11 at night, if the train isn't late. Next day, Sunday, if you like, go to Basel, and Monday to Berlin. But I shall be at your disposal, to do exactly as you desire and prefer. With no end of love to all of you, and twice as much to you, sweetheart, SAML. I believe my arm is a trifle better than it was when I started. The mention in the foregoing letter of the Napoleon effigy is the beginning of what proved to be a rather interesting episode. Mark Twain thought a great deal of his discovery, as he called it, the giant figure of Napoleon outlined by the distant mountain range. In his notebook he entered memoranda telling just where it was to be seen, and added a pencil sketch of the huge profile. But then he characteristically forgot all about it, and when he recalled the incident 10 years later, he could not remember the name of the village, Bochistel, from which the great figure could be seen. Also, that he had made a record of the place. But he was by this time more certain than ever that his discovery was a remarkable one, which, if known, would become one of the great natural wonders, such as Niagara Falls. Theodore Stanton was visiting him at the time, and Clemens urged him, on his return to France, to make an excursion to the Rhone and locate the lost Napoleon, as he now called it. But Clemens remembered the wonder as being somewhere between Arles and Avignon, instead of about 100 miles above the last named town. Stanton naturally failed to find it, and it remained for the writer of these notes, motoring up the Rhone one September day, exactly 22 years after the first discovery, to relocate the vast reclining figure of the first consul of France, dreaming of universal empire. The rediscovery was not difficult with Mark Twain's memoranda as a guide, and it was worthwhile. Perhaps the lost Napoleon is not so important a natural wonder as Mark Twain believed, but it is a striking picture, and on a clear day the calm blue face outlined against the sky will long hold the traveler's attention. To Clara Clemens, in Ouchy, Switzerland. Afloat, 11. 2:20 a.m., September. 29, Tuesday. Dear old Ben, the vast stone masses and huge towers of the ancient papal palace of Avignon are projected above an intervening wooded island a mile up the river behind me, for we are already on our way to Arles. It is a perfectly still morning, with a brilliant sun, and very hot outside, but I am under cover of the linen hood, and it is cool and shady in here. Please tell Mom I got her very last letter this morning, and I perceive by it that I do not need to arrive at Ouchie before Saturday midnight. I am glad, because I couldn't do the railroading I am proposing to do during the next 2 or 3 days, and get there earlier. I could put in the time till Sunday midnight, but she'll not venture it without telegraphic instructions from her to Nimes day after tomorrow, October 1, care Hotel Manavit. The only adventures we have is in drifting into rough seas now and then. They are not dangerous, but they go through all the motions of it. Yesterday when we shot the bridge of the Holy Spirit, it was probably in charge of some inexperienced deputy spirit for the day, for we were allowed to go through the wrong arch, which brought us into a turbulon below which tried to make this old sco stand on its head. Of course I lost my temper, and blew it off in a way, to be heard above the roar of the tossing waters. I lost it, because the Admiral had taken that arch in deference to my opinion, that it was the best one, while his own judgment told him to take the one nearest the other side of the river. I could have poisoned him, I was so mad to think I had hired such a turnip. A boatman in command should obey nobody's orders but his own, and yield to nobody's suggestions. It was very sweet of you to write me, dear, and I thank you ever so much. With greatest love and kisses, Papa. To Mrs. Clemens, in Ouchie, Switzerland. Arles, September 30, noon. Livy darling, I ain't got no time to write today, because I am sightseeing industriously, and imagining my chapter. Bade goodbye to the river trip, and gave away the boat yesterday evening. We had 10 great days in her. We reached here after dark. We were due about 4:30. Counting by distance, but we couldn't calculate on such a lifeless current as we found. I love you, sweetheart. SAML. It had been a long time since Clemens had written to his old friend Twitchell, but their own trip must have reminded him of those days 13 years earlier, when, comparatively young men, he and Twitchell were tramping through the Black Forest and scaling Gemmy Pass. He sent Twitchell a reminder of that happy time. To Rev. Joseph H. Twitchell, in Hartford, Connecticut. Nimes, October 1, 91. Dear Joe, I have been 10 days floating down the Rhone on a raft, from Lake Burgett, and a most curious and darling kind of a trip it has been. You ought to have been along, I could have made room for you easily, and you would have found that a pedestrian tour in Europe doesn't begin with a raft voyage for hilarity and mild adventure, and intimate contact with the unvisited native of the back settlements, and extinction from the world and newspapers, and a conscience in a state of coma, and lazy comfort, and solid happiness. In fact, there's nothing that's so lovely. But it's all over. I gave the raft away yesterday at Arles, and am loafing along back by short stages on the rail to Ouchie Lawson, where the tribe are staying. Love to you all, Mark. The Clemenses settled in Berlin for the winter, at 7 Cornerstrasse, and later at the Hotel Royal. There had been no permanent improvement in Mark Twain's arm, and he found writing difficult. Some of the letters promised to Laffan and McClure were still unfinished. Young Hall, his publishing manager in America, was working hard to keep the business afloat, and being full of the optimism of his years, did not fail to make as good a showing as he could. We may believe his letters were very welcome to Clemens and his wife, who found little enough in the general prospect to comfort them. To Mr. Hall, in New York. Berlin, November 27, 91. Dear Mr. Hall, that kind of a statement is valuable. It came this morning. This is the first time since the business began that I have had a report that furnished the kind of information I wanted and was really enlightening and satisfactory. Keep it up. Don't let it fall into desuetude. Everything looks so fine and handsome with the business now that I feel a great let up from depression. The rewards of your long and patient industry are on their way, and their arrival safe in port, presently, seems assured. By George, I shall be glad when the ship comes in. My arm was so much better that I was able to make a speech last night to 250 Americans. But when they threw my portrait on the screen, it was a sorrowful reminder, for it was from a negative of 15 years ago, and hadn't a gray hair in it. And now that my arm is better, I have stolen a couple of days, and finished up a couple of McClure letters that have been lying a long time. I shall mail one of them to you next Tuesday registered. Look out for it. I shall register and mail the other one concerning the UNCRA next Friday. Look out for it also, and drop me a line to let me know they have arrived. I shall write the sixth and last letter by and by when I have studied Berlin sufficiently. Yours in a most cheerful frame of mind, and with my and all the family's Thanksgiving greetings and best wishes, S50. Clemens. Postscript by Mrs. Clemens written on Mr. Clemens' letter. Dear Mr. Hall, this is my birthday and your letter this morning was a happy addition to the little gifts on the breakfast table. I thought of going out and spending money for something unnecessary after it came, but concluded perhaps I better wait a little longer. Sincerely yours, O50. Clemens. He German Chicago was the last of the six McClure letters, and was finished that winter in Berlin. It is now included in the uniform edition of Mark Twain's works, and is one of the best descriptive articles of the German capital ever written. He made no use of their own notes further than to put them together in literary form. They did not seem to him to contain enough substance to warrant publication. A letter to Hall, written toward the end of December, we find rather gloomy in tone, though he is still able to extract comfort and even cheerfulness from one of Mr. Hall's reports. Memorandum to Fred J. Hall, in New York. Among the MSS I left with you are a few that have a recent look, and are Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.